All right, Karen, this is the Winners and Losers radio program, broadcasting Fridays at 7-ish. 7-ish in the morning.
In the 7 o'clock hour.
You're in the 7 o'clock hour. And my good friend Karen Valentine found a real great guest here this morning. I'm going to have you introduce him.
Very good. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Joe. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
And I am recovering this morning, so if I start losing my voice, I've been sick all week. But my being sick all week is what led me to you. I spent a lot of time being bored with what was on television, so I was doing some research, and I found Game Changers and your new documentary, which I am going to let you. I actually watched it. I watched about half of it the other day, and then last night in preparation for the program, I watched the full documentary and was very impressed. And I can see why you're getting the recognition you are. And I can see where this is going to be a very valuable tool to use, on the ground. So I am going to let you introduce yourself because I am new to you as well. I just happened upon you, and it was really great that when I reached out, you got right back, and we are so happy to have you this morning. So please introduce yourself and let us know how you became a game changer.
Well, first of all, thank you. And thanks for the opportunity this morning. My name is Joe Bozic. I'm the executive director and one of the three founders of Game Changer. And unfortunately, Game Changer was founded out of need for the issues that we're having with the opioid substance misuse and fentanyl. I was a former sports information director at West Virginia University in the 80s and had a marketing and advertising agency. I myself developed a problem with alcohol and about 28 years ago went into treatment for that. So unfortunately, I had a little bit of a background, and then more importantly, what was the catalyst for Game Changer? I had a daughter, one of my four kids, and one of my daughters was an all-state basketball player here in Morgantown. I went to school to college to play ball, and while her freshman year, a senior gave her a pill and a beer, and we were off to the races to a heroin addiction for 3 years. Here's a girl that, you know, we used to drag kicking and screaming to the dentist because she didn't like getting her teeth numbed, and she's using a needle in her arm. Thank God that she's been 12 years clean now. She works with autistic kids and works and is just doing a wonderful job. And, you know, she'll be the first to tell you that, you know, had the fentanyl situation been as prevalent 12 years ago as it is today, we wouldn't have it. There's no way with the 3 years of addiction that she was going through that she would have been able to skirt not at some point getting a dose that was just catastrophically lethal. And so, we're glad to have her. And we're very well aware of, you know, I've had friends, this does not discriminate. You know, I tell people when we took her to a wonderful treatment facility up in the Poconos and she was there for 6 months, I saw Audis, BMWs, Mercedeses and cars that could barely get across the street, pulling into the parking lot with kids and teenagers and so on and so forth. So it's not the rich or the poor or anything. It doesn't discriminate. And it is to a point to where it is an epidemic stage. And fentanyl is real. The heroin addiction and the opioid substance misuse is horrible enough. Now, when you throw the fentanyl situation on it, it just basically intensifies it fivefold. And so when we started Game Changer, we were fortunate to enter into an agreement with the Hazelton Betty Ford Foundation. And they've developed with us a comprehensive curriculum for prevention education, because unfortunately, you know, this is just not as simple as telling kids just to say no. That was a great effort back in the 80s. It was great intention, But the only way we beat this is with comprehensive prevention education that kids make the choice not to use. They do so because they have been educated. And our program has a K to 5 facet, a 6 to 8 facet, and a 9 to 12 facet. And, you know, it is very, very well done. And it's, you know, the Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation is among the best in the world in this subject matter. The challenge is that this is not an overnight cure. You know, we're not going to go into schools and in 6 months, we're just going to start knocking the drug addiction in the head. It's going to take a while. And I call this, you know, our foundation. Anybody who's built a home knows that the most important part is that foundation. And, you know, as the house goes, so would the foundation go. And this is our major foundation. We are now in 55 schools in West Virginia, 18 counties. Governor Justice is our head coach. We have Senator Manchin, Senator Capito, and a host of others that you saw in the film, that and corporate sponsorship. So we've been very blessed. But, you know, it's going to take a while. We've met with representatives with Kentucky and Tennessee's governor's offices, and Game Changer will be in pilot programs in Kentucky and Tennessee in the fall. That being said, you know, we felt a need to touch every kid and to start beginning to touch every kid and adult in every community. So the idea came with our chairman, Larry Puccio, our chairman of the board. We did a documentary and we did it well. I mean, we paid the price that it takes to do something like that well. And we had production companies from LA, New York, and Alexandria, Virginia, experts in children's from Nickelodeon Kids to PBS Kids. And the idea is it's for 6 to 12 year olds, our 6 to 12th graders. It comes with a parent toolkit. When we re-release it this spring, it'll come with a teacher lesson plan. And it will be able to hit every 6th to 12th grader in West Virginia. And we will do a Kentucky version and a Tennessee version. That way, this with the parent teacher toolkit, we are at least starting the process as we implement the major programming into the schools. We just finished a year yesterday with representatives from the Department of Education here in West Virginia and our production crew, members of Nickelodeon Kids. We will begin in January the production of a 3rd to 5th grade type of film that deals with the same subject matter, but age appropriate. We brought in experts to know how to deal with that, those age groups, and so on and so forth. And then we will follow that up in a year with a K through 12. In addition, you know, we have looking at all possibilities of whatever we can do to continue the prevention education process immediately while we implement the more comprehensive prevention education program as our main foundation. So we have been absolutely blessed. We have had so many corporate sponsors, individual sponsorships. We have a big get together at the Greenbrier every year. It'll be our 4th one this coming May. A golf tournament, a reception, a dinner. And we have people from all over coming in to, you know, help us in the funding area. Because that one thing about anything that's good, it costs. This is not a cheap program. Right now, we're attempting to pick up 50% of the school's costs. You know, we hope that we're going to be able to continue that, if not even increase that. So long-winded, I know, but, you know, that should get you a little bit into what we're all about at Game Changer.
Well, thank you. I was hoping when we met this morning that you were going to tell me that this was just out of concern and not out of a personal experience, but I am so happy that you were able to get through your alcohol recovery and that your daughter is alive and well and with us and she survived. You are one of the good stories, because there's way too many out there that don't end that way. So thank you for your candid personal experience that you're sharing. And, you know, I did wonder, of course, if it did stem from something very personal, and that it sounds like it did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in addition to my daughter and myself, you know, I've had so many friends and relatives. One of my closest cousins, I come from a big family up in the Ohio Valley, across the river from Wheeling, and a wonderful, wonderful kid, battled it for 6-7 years and was clean for 2-3 years. And then just one time fell off the wagon at the wrong time, got the wrong batch, and at 24, he died. And you know, I've said this all along, it's been said for years. Parents shouldn't have to put their kids in the ground. No parent should have to go to their child's funeral. And too much of that is happening now. The availability over the internet, you know, I am a firm believer that we've outkicked our coverage in technology. You know, we all use it. We wouldn't all use it if we didn't have to use it. You know, if no one had cell phones, I wouldn't have a cell phone. And everybody makes fun of me because I live on my cell phone and I'm on my cell phone all the time and I'm checking texts and I'm checking this and I'm checking that. But, you know, in the days when I was sports information director, just to drive to Charleston meant 3 stops to a phone booth using a credit card to call back to the office to see if I had any messages. And, you know, again, simpler was better, in my opinion. You know, all the way down, you can't get customer service people that are right. Even in this country anymore when you call for a plethora of reasons or whatever. And what this has done with TikTok and Snapchat and all this, I was, you know, I'm 64 years old and I still have a 19-year-old. We had a surprise a while back. The rest of the kids are in their 30s. And, so, you know, and he's a good guy and he's really doing well so far. And, you know, he was only 3 when his sister had all her issues. And, you know, but I just, and he's a great student and a great athlete and so on and so forth. But, you know, I'm learning that it just blows my mind that within 15 minutes, a kid can get on using the right lingo and locate drugs. And, you know, within an hour max can have the drug in their hand. You know, DoorDash and all these things. I mean, you know, people deliver McDonald's to houses now. Well, you know, don't think for a minute there's not also other things being delivered, or kids are meeting, they drive, they meet. And, you know, that's the whole thing behind One Pill Can Kill. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know what you're getting. And the absolute horror that a 16 or 15 or 18, whatever, must feel. You take that pill and it's laced with fentanyl, the first thing that starts going is your breathing. You just suffocate. I mean, it just knocks you down. You're dead in a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I can't imagine the horror of you thinking you just bought some drugs. And all of a sudden, you know, within seconds of swallowing that pill, you start having things happen to you that you know isn't right. That has to be a horrible thing to feel. And then to die, you know, and a lot of kids die alone. You know, they're in their apartment. They get this stuff. They take the pill. They're going to get out and go party or whatever. Parents have found their kids dead, you know, and it's fentanyl. And it's real. And, you know, you cannot know whether you're getting it. They're saying now we're at, when we first started shooting One Pill Can Kill, I think it was 5 out of every 10 pills on the internet were fentanyl. We had to reshoot that little segment because it's now 6 out of 10, or it was 3 out of 10. And now it's 6 out of 10.
I have a question.
What's that?
I have a question about the fentanyl. Yes. So what is it manufactured? Does it have any medical utility at all? And if it's so, what is that utility? And why is it being manufactured at all? So that's one question.
I understand it's, and I'm not as up to date on that as I should be honest with you. But what I understand is it does have medical uses and used correctly. And it needs being used. The biggest thing I'm told is the dosages, the amounts. You know, you have to be a medical professional that is educated in how to use it. I'll tell you what was funny. My son, the athlete, he was in prep school in Connecticut for a 5th year. He's being recruited for football. And so he had a hip injury here, and we over Thanksgiving he had surgery up in Connecticut on his hip, and he got fentanyl as part of the anesthesia, but it was being administered by an anesthesiologist who knew how to use that. It does have medical purposes, I'm told, and is used a good bit. What's happening is, as like anything else, a business that's not the right kind of business has sprung off from that. And now it's being manufactured in China, coming through Mexico. And make no mistake about it, anybody is naive to think that the Chinese aren't behind the fentanyl. They have a long, very detailed plan to take us over. And it's not going to happen tomorrow or the next day. And, you know, what they're doing is they're killing, you know, this is taking away and killing our future doctors, our future lawyers, our future, it'll kill a generation. The amount of money that's made by it, the money that's derived from it is astronomical. And, the fentanyl situation is so uncontrollable with the open border now, and with so many things coming in from Mexico, it's easily brought into the United States. And it's a stone cold killer. As we say on One Pill Can Kill, it's a stone cold killer.
So are you trying to, you're trying to say that the opioid addiction is a Chinese plot?
I don't know that I would go as far as to say it's a plot. I think that it is another way to begin. You know, we read every day that there's land being bought and in our country by businesses that are Chinese affiliated. It's no secret they are not our friends. I mean, you know, that we have issues, and this is just another facet of what is able to affect our society in a way that I'll give you a very good story. TikTok, yeah, I'm sure you're aware of it, and I had to get educated on it because I don't know that much about social media, and I'm obviously not a fan of social media. But TikTok's owned by the Chinese. I know that, you know, Senator Manchin and everybody else has brought and is attempting to bring legislation in Congress to ban TikTok in our country. We bought a ton of advertising. We had a huge $250,000 social media campaign last fall was a spinoff of One Pill Can Kill. And it was reaching all sixth graders and 12th graders around West Virginia on TikTok is one of the main ones. We got a cease and desist. They took us down. TikTok removed our social media campaign, said it was in violation of company policy or whatever. Senator Manchin immediately went to work on that. I ended up getting an interview on Fox News about it because we were removed from TikTok. They acquiesced in the end and came back and said, well, if we would adhere to some requirements, they would allow us back on. We, under advisement from our board and others, just decided probably better not. We'll take our business to other platforms, and we dropped them. But then I come to find out, you know, TikTok in America and TikTok in China are two different things. TikTok in China is math, English, so on and so forth. And you know, I think there's a lot of different facets other than just TikTok and other than just the Chinese government. But the bottom line is we're having massive amounts of fentanyl coming in, killing our people.
I did do some research on that because in the documentary, you know, just the sheer amounts in these small towns in West Virginia, the sheer amounts of pills that they're finding, you know, where people are dealing is just astronomical. And I did start to, you know, wonder, like, where really is this coming from? And a lot of it does appear to be coming from China. And I thought the interview with the woman who was in prison, she's been in prison for 18 years, and, you know, her saying she used to drive from West Virginia down to what, Miami or somewhere in Florida, and get, pounds of pills. And I clearly it's not just a crooked anesthesiologist selling some fentanyl and small production. This is mass production. And so just watching it was eye-opening for me about where that this is coming, from foreign entities, and in the numbers that it's reaching our population is pretty frightening. And then, I guess what I also think about is a lot of people, when we talk about rehabilitation, it sounds like people send their children or their loved ones to other places for rehab. What do we have available in West Virginia? Are we lacking resources in West Virginia to have good rehabilitation services for people?
Well, this is a personal opinion. This is not a an opinion that, I'm gonna try to sell as fact. This is correct, but this is my thoughts. Having been in treatment, having a daughter who's been in treatment, having wanting to give as much credit as I can to treatment for me and for her, I think that there is a fine line between the business of treatment and the business of treatment. And what I mean by that is, we are a 501c3. This wasn't started as a money-making grab, and it will never be a money-making grab. We have bills to meet, so we have to raise money. But, for us to be successful, we have to spend money. Treatment centers are a business, and they have payroll to meet, and they have costs to meet to do things correctly. So first and foremost, everybody wants to get in the treatment business. Everybody wants to capitalize on the treatment business because it's the United States of America. We're a capitalistic society, and I'm all for that. And there is obviously a need for them. I think the biggest thing that I'd like to see is, I think I have an idea that what would be the most opportunity for success. Successful, the percentage of people coming out of treatment remaining clean is very low. They come out with all the right intentions and they want to be clean. It's an addiction, it's a sickness. So we're battling a battle right off the bat, no matter what. A 28-day program worked for me. A 28-day program would never have worked for my daughter. That's not enough time. And I've said it time and time again that the treatment. I'm in total disagreement with some of the experts on this, or so-called experts. They tell me that statistics prove the most successful form of treatment are day treatments, meaning you get up and you go at 9 o'clock and you are at home at 5 or 6, and then you go to a meeting in the evening, and then you go back to wherever at the next morning, and it's day treatment. I don't care what their statistics say. There is two opportunity is one of the keys to, in my opinion, opportunity. Is the leading reason for falling off the wagon, and relapsing, because the one of the things that my daughter did, she was in the Poconos, she was there 6 months, she went to a halfway house after that for 6 months, and then she stayed in Scranton, Pennsylvania for almost 10 years. She came home at Christmas, she came home a couple times in the summer for a weekend, but one of the things they stress is you've got to change your lifestyle. And get away from your former friends. The one thing that a user doesn't want anybody to get clean. And so you get clean and come back and you're clean, your friends are still using, your former friends, they're not going to, there may be one or two, but overall they want you to use. So you've got to divulge yourself of that. And I think that treatment centers are so needed, but I'm a total advocate of the kind my daughter went to. It was a beautiful home that had 28 girls. They got up every morning. Someone had breakfast duty. There was a team for breakfast, lunch, dinner, clean up. Beds had to be made. Bedrooms had to remain clean. There were life lessons. There were major sessions all day long. And you did this for 6 months, horseback riding on the weekends, canoeing on the weekends, getting into a lifestyle, then a halfway house for 6 months. So, you know, that's my thoughts on treatment.
Right, right.
Well, I have a number of other questions about your approach. And I doubt that we would agree on a number of them. First of all, I've read quite a bit of data on this, at least especially in West Virginia, and there's a overwhelming correlation between addiction and poverty, especially the cycle of reinvention. People who have very little means don't have as many lifestyle choices as people might presume. That's one issue. The other is that, I think to paint the Chinese government as the source of the fentanyl epidemic among mostly, not entirely, but mostly poor people is far-fetched and possibly a diversion from some people who might have a much more reasonable and understandable interest in having the poverty problem just go away through murder, chemical murder, and the circulation of these drugs just put people in. Because right now, our major treatment program is the prison system and the incarceration system, which is a disaster in West Virginia to anyone who's been anywhere near it. So, and our brother John Unger, I don't think I'm misrepresenting him, resigned from being a magistrate because rather than do something about the cycle of someone's busted for dope and they don't have enough money for bail, so they head into the prison system awaiting trial. And the magistrate has no authority whatsoever to change that direction to alternatives or whatever, and so he gave it up. So I think there's some questions that's not addressed by your approach that are pretty.
And that is something, yeah, John and I have talked about a lot, is how do we address, as people that are concerned about this, how do we address the hopelessness of the poor users, of the people that don't have the opportunities to go to a viable long-term, you know, rehab? And, you know, those are the questions that those social ills, what I think with one pill can kill. I think it is helpful because you're getting to the root of trying to get children before they even start. And that is part of the solution that John and I, you know, talk about, like the cycle of poverty that we have in our state is, you know, we've got to find a way to give kids hope. But when you're living in poverty, hope is a hard thing to come by. So, you know, I know that every organization, every mission can't solve every problem. How do you see Game Changers being able to address the poverty issue and, you know, kind of keeping kids out of that cycle that will land them into a prison system that is not going to benefit them in any way?
Well, first of all, and let me say this, John, we don't disagree at all I think we may disagree on the Chinese situation. I've read too much to not believe that there is a concerted effort to bring fentanyl through China into Mexico and into the United States. I think we totally agree on what you've discussed about poverty and about the prison system. I think that is just another reason why this is such a complicated issue. It's not one facet. It's a multifaceted problem that affects everyone, and does affect those in poverty more because of the fact that it is an escape from reality. It's an escape when a dad was a coal miner making good money and going to Myrtle Beach once a year on a family vacation, now driving a pizza delivery truck. Not to downgrade driving pizza delivery trucks, but their honors hurt and they don't have the cash makeup anymore. You go to the Welches of the world, McDowell County and Boone County and Logan County, and you see some of people whose families who live in homes that were beautiful at one point, they're run down because they don't have the money anymore to keep them up, that were making good money. So everything you say is 100% correct. And that's the issue with this drug problem, because I can also tell you that you wouldn't realize when you go to a soccer game, for instance, that the lady that just pulled up in the Tahoe and dropped her daughters off and sat with her friends and watched the game just took two freaking strong pills and is flying high as a kite right now and is addicted to opioids and painkillers and so on and so forth. You know, that's not as prevalent. Poverty is so awful that it's right there to see. You can't miss it. You'll miss the lady in the Tahoe that has the problem. The difference is if someone can get to her, she probably has the financial wherewithal. How Game Changers tries to do this, and I'll be the first to admit, again, we just can't hit it all. But mm-hmm. what we try to do is the way that it is structured with peer leaders and so on and so forth. There's an identification process through surveys and data that we have an opportunity to identify, you know, the other facet to this disease is there are a lot of kids that aren't using at all and are clean as whistles, and mom and or dad or both are constantly using. So their home life is awful. Would statistics show that at some point, if that's not corrected, they will begin using. I will give you a story last year at this time that's just heart-wrenching. A young girl, 12, 13 years old, was leaving to get on the bus for last day of school. Her mom was a user, a user that is not the kind that's, you know, you would think was a user. Was high at the time and told her, don't forget, it's Christmas cookie baking time when we get home, school's out and everything. That girl thought all day about spending time with her mom to bake Christmas cookies and Christmas candy and so on and so forth. Jumped off the bus, ran in the house, school's out, it's Christmas time, it's the holidays. Her mother had run out of pills and couldn't find pills and was going through, if you know anything about opioid withdrawal, it's awful. It's your worst case of the flu or COVID. And the last thing she thought about was wanting to make cookies. And the girl, obviously having zero idea, says, hey, mommy, we going to start the cookies? And the mom says, we're not baking cookies today. And you need to do your homework and get in your room and get your homework done. Well, mom, I don't need to worry about homework. I'm not, just do what I tell you. Well, right off the bat, can we imagine what just went through this girl's mind as she's sitting there wondering what happened between this morning and now? And I don't have all the answers. I will go to my grave looking for the answers. I think the good thing we have going is there are a lot of people just like both of you who want to address this in their way to bring more awareness to this. Awareness is the big thing. As far as the poverty, you know, the more we can identify kids that are coming from homes that there is drugs being used and kids that are using that are in a poverty situation. I know our teachers in our schools and our educators are the key conduit because they see these kids every day. My wife is a speech pathologist here in Monongalia County, you know, in a school that's K through five. She's told me things that I guess I'm naive. I just shake my head. I tell my kids all the time, sometimes I get angry because they've had nice lives. They've been provided for. We've been very fortunate. You have no idea what it's like. You zero have any idea what it's like to come from a family that has had financial situations and then on top of mom and or dad using drugs, and your whole world stinks. It stinks. There's nothing fun about it. There's nothing happy about it. No 12, 13, 10, 8, 7, it doesn't matter. No, everybody deserves a shot. Everybody deserves a shot to, you know, do something with their life productive. And unfortunately right now, and I'm sure we'll agree on this, John, we've got too many kids that don't get the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well,
I do think the documentary is a good way of giving kids a voice. That's what shown through for me was how respectful it was of a child's voice. And that is really important when you're talking to kids about drugs, alcohol, addiction, anything, is that their voice is respected. Because I thought it really struck me, the one, I think it was a girl who said, she almost said you have to be careful about bringing an adult into it. Like when she was asked, you know, who would you go to, or would you tell an adult if you knew a friend of yours was using or something? It was in that context. And she said, well, you have to be careful if you bring an adult into it, you know, because tattling on your friend kind of thing. And I think you did, the documentary did a good job at addressing the issue in a way that is empowering kids without, you know, telling them, like you said, just say no doesn't work. It'll definitely spark some, you know, self-reflection, I think, in the kids that watch it in schools. And so, I'll be interested to see what the, you know, younger version that you come out with will be like, because that's a tough one, you know? You know, what's going to happen when you're dealing with a third grader and finally somebody's talking to them about these little pills that they see at home all the time because mom has them in her drawer. And, you know, then what's going to happen when she's like, oh, my mommy has those pills. Then who gets involved?
Then she gets arrested.
You know, like it's going to become a whole another layer, because it is
this,
so rampant.
This came up in a lot of West Virginia AFT. Some teachers were talking about 25% of their classrooms, and now this was near Charleston, were you know, kids that were coming from one form or another of learning disability, okay, and or special needs. I think that category gets a little spongy, all who gets included in it sometimes. But anyway, and so she was talking about one of these kids came to school and how the book bag that they were carrying, you know, smelled like cat urine. Hmm. And but it turns out that cat urine smells the same as something that's been around cooked meth.
Really? Learned something new every day. Yeah. I was unaware of that.
You know, and that's why two or three kids in the room, their book bags smelled like they'd been left near a cat box or something like that, you know. But actually, there's meth was being cooked in their home, and it was somehow got on that book.
We did a last September through last January, we did a exhibit with the DEA. They're partners of ours. And it was called Drugs, Costs, and Consequences. It was a 5,000-foot square exhibit brought in to the Cultural Center on the Capitol grounds. And we had 20,000 kids and adults go through there in the 4 months we had it. They had a house, bedrooms. There's different segments. You walked all through this. And they had, you know, an awful scene of, you know, dirty diapers and, you know, meth cooking, the stove. What kids, you know, kids getting up every morning. You know, my kids get up this morning, go down and get cereal or get their breakfast, or this time of year, their mom's cooking cinnamon rolls or whatever. And, you know, there are kids getting up hungry and while their parents are cooking meth to take care of an addiction. I mean, I try to look at the positives on this, because sometimes, even as we discuss this now, it's becoming more and more inundating to me that I want to say basically that, you know, sometimes you just get overwhelmed with, like, the more you talk about it, the more you feel like you're in water treading and not going anywhere. You go one place and you make a lot of strides and you make a lot of progress, and you turn around and get three more reports over here of issues. The positive that I look at it is, this is the one thing that seems to me so far, in going into our fifth year of Game Changer, is that we have people wanting to help. We've had people step up. We are blessed. There's no way we could have gone to the point we're at right now, at this moment, without the help of hundreds of corporations and individuals and the government and so on and so forth. You know, we are getting federal funding coming in to do Game Changer programs in the eastern part of Kentucky and southern West Virginia, because of the obvious reasons of what you spoke about, John. I can tell you, whether we're successful or not, you can take solace in one thing. Through Senator Manchin, through Will Thompson and Bill Ilvenfeld, our two U.S. attorneys, and through the Appalachian HIDA, which is the high-intensity drug trafficking area out of the federal government, there is a huge movement to get this involved down in those areas of Kentucky and West Virginia that's hit so hard. You know, it is a huge challenge. I pray that we're going to be, you know, if we save one kid, if one kid comes out of that and gets a college degree or a technical degree and gets, stays off and stays clean and doesn't use drugs and goes on to a solid career, I call it a win, you know.
I agree, and amen to that. I'm going to have to sign off. Usually we limited it to about 45 minutes. And I would love, Joe, to have you back, and I'm sure John would. I'd love to hear the progress of how Game Changers moves on with the additional creation of more documentaries and expanding into the schools. Again, it's hard to think of a problem this monumental, and I'm sure you do have days where you feel like, whew, this is just a drop in the bucket, but everything anybody can do is good. I mean, John does a great job on his Recovery Roads radio show that has reached out, and you know, every little thing that each person can do, and sharing your personal stories is part of it. And so we all have to, I think every approach has to be thrown at this, you know?
Well, I want to tell you, first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity. I would love to come on as much as you'll have me. And, you know, the more we can use as a forum to get the word out. I will say, in closing, on the third to fifth grade, I'll give you a small sneak peek of how we're dealing with that age group that we're told. Mm-hmm. They're going to go to a playground and go through a little obstacle course of monkey bars and running around and doing all that. And they're talking about healthy choices and what happens when you use drugs, so on and so forth. They're going to be given little weights tapped around their ankles and told to do the obstacle course again. And then once they do the obstacle course, they're going to show us, look, you know, when you didn't have the weights on, you did that in a minute 10. You did it in 2 minutes and 30 seconds with the weights on. So, you know, you see what happens when you are, you know, hampered by outside entity that causes you to slow down. The same can happen in your life when you ingest. It's all about that age group. We'll be talking about healthy choices and doing good things for your body and so on and so forth. So, again, I think what you're doing, I don't know a lot about, you know, till now, I'm just getting to know you. You know where to find me.
Absolutely.
You know to get a hold of me. John, I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, call me anytime, even if it's just a chat offline.
Sounds good. Thanks for all your hard work.
We will chase it down for sure. And thank you for, you know, you've obviously expended a tremendous amount of effort, and it is an important issue. Well, I might leave you with a question to think about for another thing. That take the situation where a teacher has discovered that the source, they may have a program in place, just as you suggest, you know, but they have see that here is a child where they're in an environment that, one, has a criminal dimension to it, okay? And so the child, now you say, don't use drugs. Well, they're not in a position to defy their parents, really, you know. I remember the Soviet Union once made a hero out of somebody who informed on their parents. I don't think they, whatever, I can remember something like that from way back. I don't know, it's hard to have that as the basis of some policy, in my view, you know. But what about the state or the school systems or some authorities' ability to intervene in that situation? And
I think that's a great topic for another show, because that's exactly what I was thinking, John, too. It's like it's great to create the dialogue, but then what's going to happen when a child rats on their parents or their aunt or their babysitter? Yeah. You know, like,
they can't even.
That's.
I'd love to come back on, you know.
Yeah, let's leave that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, everybody. Thank you so very much for being on the Winners and Losers radio program today. And we'll come back. Take care of each other. It's late.
Merry Christmas.
And everything comes next.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Recording stopped.